We left off last week. We had completed reading the Machlokes, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, or Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, also argued about the same issue, which is, what is the terminal period, the end time, for eating the Korban Pesach, min HaTorah? It seems pretty clear that midrabanan, rabbinically speaking, one is prohibited from eating. Everybody agrees one cannot eat it after midnight, after Chatzos. But the question is whether or not that time of Chatzos, that restriction, as opposed to dawn, as opposed to Amud HaShachar, is the Oraisa or the Rabbanan. So it was a Machlokes. And what I wanted to explore, and I mentioned last week, I think I had a teaser question, is how do we paskin and why does it matter? So I'm going to share the document which was located. The title of this part of the Makoros is Bizman Binyan Zman Achilas Korban Pesach. And the first source that I placed here is one that I mentioned last week. It's a somewhat familiar source. The Mishnah says Habachor Vamaser VaPesach Kodshim Kalin. This is the last Mishnah in the fifth parak of Ezehu Makoman. Just as a little side piece of tidbit, there are those who claim that the reason why do we say Ezehu Makoman, why that particular parak of Mishnah is. I don't know if anybody's ever heard why. There's a reason given for it. Is that it's the only Mishnah, only parak of Mishnah in Shas that has no machlokas in it. That sounds like a great idea. It's not true, actually. I've actually checked. I stopped looking when I looked in Seder Zoraim. I found at least one chapter that has no machlokas. But anyway, this is the last Mishnah, and it describes the times for eating and who can eat and where the karbanos can be eaten. So it says, Habachor v'amasra pesach kachim kalim, shchitasa b'chol makom azara, you can shech them anywhere in the azara, etc. When you go to the last full line, the third line, ha-pesach eno nechal ela balayla, it can only be eaten at night, as opposed to all other karbanos that as soon as you shech them, you can eat them. And we saw this issue raised in the Gemara last week, where the Gemara had at least a momentary possibility, not a serious one, that maybe for Rabbi Akiva, you would have thought maybe you can eat the Korban Pesach that night, the next day, and the following night, because normally a Korban Pesach is a Korban Shlamim. There are actually three kinds of Korban Shlamim. One is called a Zevach Shlamim, one is called a Zevach Todah, and one is called a Zevach Haga Pesach. Those are the three Zvachim. There's functionally three Shlamim. So one might have thought, since a regular Shlamim, you get 2 days and one night, a Korban Pesach, you should get 2 nights and one day. So the Mishnah firstly tells us, Eino Nechal B'Layla, it can only be eaten at night, not immediately after you slaughter it. You have to wait till sundown on the 15th. Ve'eino Nechal Ela Ad Chatzos, it may only be eaten up until midnight. So the halacha is absolutely clear. Now, the question is, how should we paskin, though? Because we all agree, let's say Rabbi Akiva agrees, you're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach at the Chatzos. But the Mishnah doesn't tell us whether that time limit is the Oraisa of the Rabbanan. For example, if you go back earlier in Ezehu Makoman, I didn't put it here, when the Mishnah describes, let's say, a Korban Chatas, it says, V'necho lefnim min ha'kloyim lezichrei kohuna, it has to be eaten within the walls of the Azara, only to male Kohanim, liyom v'layla ad Chatzos. It can be eaten the day you shecht it and the night until Chatzos. Everybody agrees that Chatzos is only the Rabbanon. That Min HaTorah, you can eat a Korban Chatas, you can eat a Korban Todah, you can eat a Korban Asham all the way until dawn. But the Chachamim prohibited eating it after Chatzos, and that was mentioned in the first Mishnah, our Masechta. That's what Rabban Gamliel said to his children. So the question is, when it says that the Korban Pesach can only be eaten until Chatzos, is that like all the other Chatzoses? Or no, could this one perhaps be the Oraisa? Now, the Mishnah in Megillah tells us the following. The Mishnah says, Kol Hayom, and we spoke about this Mishnah, not last week, but earlier in the Sugya. Kol Hayom is kosher l'kriyas ha-Megillah, the l'kriyas ha-halot. All day, and all day means, ideally from a sunrise, but b'di'eved from dawn. All day is good for kriyas ha-Megillah, kriyas ha-halel, reciting the halel, tkiyas shofar, on Rosh Hashanah, netilas lulav on Sukkot. Tfilas ha-musafin, you can daven musaf all day. Ulu musafin, to bring the musaf itself, I guess. Levidu ha-parim, levidu might, that when the Sanhedrin would do a vidui on, when they made an Arum sak halacha, vidui meiser, when you, at the end of 3 years, when you, uh, when you stand in front of God and say that I did everything I was supposed to do with Trumas and Maisros, Vidu Yom HaKippurim, when we confess on Yom Kippur, Smicha on a Karban, Shchit on a Karban, waving the Karban, Hagasha, which means bringing the Karban Mincha to the Zbeach, Kmitza, when the Kohen sticks his hand in and takes out some of the flour and oil, Lahatara, burning the Kmitza on the Mizbeach, Lemalika, that's the Shchit of birds. It's not done from the front, it's done from the back. Lekabbalah is receiving the blood. Lahazaya, sprinkling the blood on the Mizbeach. Lahashkaya Sota, if you ever had a Sota that you had to do the ritual with. Larifas Ha'egla, when you have to break the neck of the heifer. Ulatara Samitzora. All these things are a mitzvah during the day, and they can be done all day. Then, a slightly smaller and lonelier list, Kol HaLayla, the entire night is kosher, L'Ktzira Sa'omer, the way the Korban Omer would be brought when the Beis HaMikdash was standing, is they would, the night of the 16th, they would go out and they would cut the grain, and they would process it throughout, you know, basically it was done at night into the next day. But the Ktzira is supposed to be done at night, the harvesting. And that's why, in fact, because it has a specific time, that's why it's done even on Shabbos. Even if the first day of Chol HaMoed was Shabbos, doesn't happen in our calendar. Pesach can't come out on Friday. But let's say Pesach could come out on Friday once upon a time when they had the Sanhedrin and they declared the new month based upon the witnesses. So even if it were Shabbos, you cut the Omer at night. And Ulehekter Chalavim Beivarim. And for burning the limbs and fats of Karbanos that were brought during the day, you're allowed to burn it during the day, but you can also burn it through that night until the next morning, and you can do it the entire night. And then the Mishnah gives us a rule. Zehaklal, this is the rule. Davar shemitzvaso bayom, anything whose mitzvah is a day mitzvah, kosher kol hayom. And davar shemitzvaso balayla is kosher kol hayom. Okay, that seems to be unexceptionable, the Mishnah. Okay, it's good if you want to get a lot of bikkias, lots of different mitzvahs mentioned there. However, the Gemara comes along, and this is a particular method that the Bavli uses. Whenever the Mishnah gives you a series of details, and then it says, Zehaklal, this is the general rule. So the Talmud Bavli, with, as far as I know, only one exception in Shas, always assumes that the Zehaklal is teaching us another case that's not mentioned in the Mishnah. It's almost like darshaning a pasuk. You have an extra word in the pasuk, you teach an extra case. So Zehaklal teaches us something extra. So the Gemara says on the second half, Davar Shemitzvaso Balayla, on the fourth line, Davar Shemitzvaso Balayla Kosher Kala Layla. The Gemara says, La Asuye Mai. What example of something that is a mitzvah at night, and it's a mitzvah the entire night, that the Mishnah doesn't happen to mention? What does the Zehaklal teach us when it says, Davar Shemitzvaso Balayla, a mitzvaso's Kala Layla? So the Gemara answers, La Asuye Achilas Psachim. It's to teach you that Achilas Psachim may be done the entire night. Udelo Kirabi Elazar Ben Azariah. The Mishnah is against Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah's opinion. Ditanya V'ochluas HaBasar Balayla Hazeh. Amar Rabbi Elazar Ben Azariah. Nemar Kan Balayla Hazeh. V'nemar Lahalan V'abarti Veretz Mitzrayim Balayla Hazeh. Malahalan Al Chatzos Ad Kan Al Chatzos. End of Perek. So what the Gemara in Megillah claims is that the anonymous Mishnah, the Stam Mishnah in Megillah, is against the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, which means presumably it is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. Now, if we were to stop here, we would say, okay, well, Rabbi Yochanan is quoted many, many, many times throughout Shas as stating that halachah is Stam Mishnah. Not everybody agreed that Rabbi Yochanan said it, but it is a general rule. A general rule of psak is that when we have an anonymous Mishnah, meaning we know there's a machlokas, but Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, when he edited the Mishnah, chose to, in effect, enshrine that opinion, one opinion anonymously, as if it's the only opinion. So that is a very strong arrow pointing in favor of psak in that shita. So one would assume if we stopped here that we passed like Rabbi Akiva, and the ramifications will become clear later, and that would be the end. However, Tosos writes the following. Tosus, this is Tosus in Megillah, right at the end of the second parak that we just read. Mikol makom, Tosus says, Nired halacha krabi Elazar. Tosus says he thinks we still pass like Elazar and Azariah. Why? Dehaika stama be'arve psach. And we haven't read that Gemara yet. We're going to read it in a little bit. Dekoi kavase. There is a Mishnah, an anonymous Mishnah. It's the last Mishnah of Maseches Psachim that seems to accord seems to be in accord with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's opinion. Ditznan haPesach achachatzos mitame seyadayim. We'll explain when we get there in a moment. But based upon that Mishnah, Satosa says that it would appear we have a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And then he says, and this I don't understand, v'chein Mishnah be'ezehu makoman. And we also have a Stam Mishnah ezehu makoman. I don't know why Tosus assumes that that's a Stam Mishnah like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, because all the other examples in the Perek of Ad Chatzos are only Drabbanan, so maybe the last one's also only Drabbanan. And then he says, our Mishnah, Ustama, Bisov Perekama de Brachos, it's not really at the end, the Mishnah's at the beginning, Gabe Masa, Uvana, Bashar Rabbi Gamliel, we base HaMishnah, Omar Lahem, Komasha, Amru Chachamam Ad Chatzos, Mitzvasan Ad Shalam HaShachar. He's just quoting our Gemara. V'ilu achilas psachim lokatani. Rabbi Gamliel, when he was talking to his children, and he gave them examples of things that are only that are up into chatzos, but only rabbinically, that minat Torah could be done till dawn. So our Gemara said he left that achilas psachim umoki la to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah the Amar ad chatzos. So our Gemara, which we read last week, says our Mishnah, the first Mishnah Brachos, is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. V'imke, now why does this matter? So Tosa says v'imke. Sarach lemaher lechol matza b'leile psachim kodem chatzos, va'afilu matza shalafi koman. So Tosa says that because vizman achilas matza mid oraisa is only until chatzos, we have to make sure that we eat our matza before chatzos. On the assumption is that if we had a korban pesach, we would not be forgetting about what the Avera that would be involved. We wouldn't fulfill the mitzvah of eating the Korban Pesach after Chatzos. We wouldn't fulfill the Ochluas HaBasar Balayla Hazeh. Therefore, we don't have Pesach, Korban Pesach Bismar Hazeh, but we still do have matzah. And Tosa says the matzah has to be eaten before Chatzos. Va'afilu matzah shel afikoma. Even if it's the afikoma matzah. Now, why does Tosa say this? Sharechi of matzah Bismar Hazeh HaVedoraisa. Since the obligation of matzah is doraisa, therefore it must be done before chatzos. Now, we'll explore this more in a moment when we look at the Gemara Pesachim. Aval Tosa says, "Bahalel shalat l'achachikoman ein lahachmir kokach sharei midrabanan." So Tosa says that even though you have to be machmir to finish the matzah, even of afikoman, before chatzos, before midnight, nonetheless, halel, you want to sing afterwards, that's fine. Now, what was the basis of Tosis's position? So I'm going to skip the Rambam just for a moment and take a look at one of the last Gemaras in Maseches Pesachim. Omar Rava, Ochal Matzah Bizman Hazeh Achar Chatzos L'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Lo Yotza Yudei Chovasa. So the Gemara makes the following claim, that if you paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, then if you eat the matzah after chatzos, you don't fulfill your obligation, which is exactly what Tosus paskin. Tosus is using this Gemara. He's using this Gemara to teach you, to prove that this issue is linked. That if you hold that it's only mid the Rabbanon, the limit of chatzos by Korban Pesach, then that's a chumrah by Korban Pesach. And the reason why, Tosus doesn't spell it out, but the reason why the Chachamim were strict is because if you eat a carbon after its proper time, you're chayiv kares. It's a serious affair. If you did it by accident, you have to bring a carbon chatas. What happens if you eat matzah after midnight, even if midnight were the deadline? The answer is you had matzah. That's all. Did you fulfill your mitzvah daraisa? No. You didn't do an avera in eating the matzah. You just never fulfilled your mitzvah. Okay, that's a bad thing. It's not the same thing as doing an avera, which entails the penalty of kares when done intentionally. So that's why if you say, like Rabbi Akiva, if you paskel like Rabbi Akiva, that min haTorah you really lack to eat the Korban Pesach until dawn, but the Chachamim set a deadline of chatzos, so you don't accidentally eat nosar, so then matzah doesn't matter. Since min haTorah you can eat it after chatzos, and even you can eat it until dawn, and even if you ate the matzah after dawn, the world doesn't come to an end. Therefore, for Rabbi Akiva, it would be fine to eat the matzah after chatzos, even though you're not allowed to eat the Korban Pesach. But Rava is telling us that for Elazar ben Azariah, you're not yotze, because you're not yotze, forget about the affair, you're not yotze Korban Pesach eating after chatzos, you're not yotze matzah. So now the Gemara just says the following, Pshita, of course, what's Rava's novelty here? It's obvious. The chayvan de iskish le Pesach, since the eating a matzah is in the same pasuk. It is juxtaposed to. It's really combined with eating Pesach. Tzliyesh umatzos al marim yochluhu. So why would you have thought otherwise? Ke Pesach dami. Of course, it has the same din as parim Pesach. The yochluas habasar balayla azet tzliyesh umatzos al marim yochluhu. So the same obligation balayla azet that applies to Karban Pesach applies to the mass as well. So the Gemara says no. Mahu detem, I would have thought ha'apke kramei akesha. Now, you would have thought the following. Why do we eat matzah bizman hazeh? When, you know, Pesach comes around again, we will eat matzah, God willing, with larger families gathered around the table, everybody who wants to be there, kol dichven yesev yechol. Not in quarantine, not in tiny, tiny pots. So everybody is going to come. So why is it that we eat matzah? We don't have a Karban Pesach. It's very nice. We don't have a Karban Pesach. So what are we supposed to do? So the Gemara tells us elsewhere in the 10th Perek of Pesachim that even though there's no mitzvah achilas Pesach bizman hazeh, and there is, by the way, no mitzvah of eating mar either, because it says, v'achlu as habasar balayla zeh tzli'esh umatzos al-marim yochaluhu, nonetheless, so matzah should not apply bizman hazeh if Karban Pesach doesn't and mar doesn't. However, there's a separate pasuk later in this section, which is Ba'erev Tochlu Matzos, and that serves as the source that even today, when we have no Karban Pesach, we still have a mitzvah d'oraisa of eating matzah. So you would have thought, once the Torah has basically had to create a separate mitzvah, because Pesach, matzah, and marah don't apply anymore, who says that our matzah that we eat is governed by the strictures of Pesach? In other words, in effect, there are two obligations of matzah. There's an obligation of eating matzah with the Karban Pesach, and obviously you can only fulfill that obligation min ha-Torah during a time that you are permitted min ha-Torah to eat the Karban Pesach. But then there's a separate obligation of ba'erev tochlu matzos, and that may not mean, you would have thought that that isn't governed by the same restrictions, the same rules, and the same frame. So kamash malan, the Gemara tells us that what Rav is teaching us by telling us that in fact, even Mizman Hazeh, you have to eat matzah before Chatzos, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, is that the Chi Ahadre Kra, once the Torah restores the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah, in other words, we had a mitzvah of eating matzah, and that mitzvah fell into disuse because we have no Karban Pesach. Now the Torah comes and it brings back the mitzvah of matzah. Rabbi is telling you that Lemilsa Kamaisa Ahadre. It puts it back. It's the original category. In other words, the matzah that we eat bizman hazeh is treated the same way as the matzah we would have eaten if we had a Karban Pesach. It has every single rule that matzah has, except that we're not eating it with the Karban Pesach. So that is the Gemara's conclusion. And that's why Rabbi had to tell us this. Some of you might remember, I won't quiz anybody about Maseches Avodah Zarah, but we actually encountered this concept when we learned Maseches Avodah Zarah. I would be awed if anybody actually remembered it, but I won't, unless somebody wants to come and volunteer quickly, I'll tell you where it was, which is the following. You're not allowed to eat, let's say, you're not allowed to eat non-kosher food, let's say pork. You can't eat pork, fine. So you take a slice of pork, you're not allowed to eat it. What happens if that pork gets mixed into something else? And let's say it's 1/20 or something like that. It's a fairly small portion. But the problem is you're able to taste the pork. In other words, it's no Saint Tom. Okay, Josh, I'm sure this is sounding pretty familiar. Now, it's no Saint Tom. Are you allowed to eat it? The answer is no. Now, why are you not allowed to eat it? So it's a machlokas harishonim. Some rishonim, the Rambam and Rashi say it's only rabbinic prohibition. Many rishonim, like Tosfos and the Rashba, say it's a Torah prohibition. Okay, so let's say, like Tosfos for a moment, you're not allowed to eat it. It's a Torah prohibition. How do we know you're not allowed to eat it? So the Gemara has a specific drasha, whatever the drasha is, that tells you that you can't have something that's ta'am ki'ikar, that if you can taste it, it's like eating the thing itself. There might be a pasuk by Nazir that teaches us this principle, that when you have something, a food that's prohibited, which is batel, in other words, it's far more heter than iser, but you're able to taste the iser, that you're not allowed to eat it. Okay, now let me ask a question. What happens if you eat it anyway? The source for the idea of tam ki'ikar is not a lo sase. It's not a negative prohibition. It's kind of something just, we'll call it an assay of some kind. So you can't get malchus for that. So many Rishonim say that tam ki'ikar, the idea that if you can taste it, it's like the thing is there and it's prohibited min ha-Torah to eat it, that it's prohibited minat Torah, but you don't get malchus. Right? There are a lot of things that you're not allowed to do minat Torah, but if the Torah doesn't formulate it in a very specific way with a negative prohibition, then you don't get the punishment of malchus. But Rabbeinu Tam comes along and Rabbeinu Tam says no. Rabbeinu Tam says that this is what we call a hadre le'isura kama. That originally the Torah said you're not allowed to eat chazir. Not eating chazir means I can't take actually a piece of pork. But that would not include if chazir fell into meat, kosher meat, and was nullified by a majority, was batel berov. But now the Torah comes along and says that even if the chazir is batel berov, even if it's nullified by a majority, but if you can taste it, you're not allowed to eat it. So now there's a new prohibition. Rabbeinu Tam says, once you have a new prohibition, what that does is ahadre li surakama. It puts it back into the original category. Now, according to Rabbeinu Tam, when you eat your kosher meatballs, which taste have the flavor of chazir in them because chazir got mixed in, you get the same punishment as eating chazir. So that's the exact same thing as opposed to by a mitzvah, by an isser that Rabbeinu Tam states, but it's the same concept. When something doesn't fall into the original category, the Torah creates it anew. Does it sort of fall back by default into the original, or does it take on a new life of its own? So here the Gemara says the mitzvah of eating matzah, Rava is teaching us that the mitzvah of eating matzah on Leil Pesach, even though we have no Karban Pesach, even though it's derived from a separate verse, a separate pasuk, once the Torah tells us, Be'erev Toch L'matzos, it now snaps back into the category of Tzli'esh U'matzos, V'achluas HaBasor B'alayla HaZeh, Tzli'esh U'matzos, and if that mitzvah, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Mida Oraisa is only until midnight, is only until Chatzos, then so too you cannot fulfill the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah after Chatzos. So that is where Tosos and Megillah is coming from. That Tosos wants to argue that we have three anonymous Mishnayos that assume like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and what that means is that you have to eat your matzah today, you know, Bisman Hazeh, you have to eat the matzah before Chatzos. Now, I'm going to go back to the source sheet for just one moment, because of course there is another opinion, and that is the opinion of Rambam. So Rambam here, he's not talking about eating matzah on the afikoman, but the Rambam writes here, Kvar be'arnu b'kama makomos, she'ena pesach nechol ela ad chatzos, kidei laharchik min ha'avera. The Rambam, I don't know where else the Rambam, I haven't found the places, and I don't think the commentators point out where the Rambam has said that, the many places. But the Rambam says that you're not allowed to eat the Pesach except for until Chatzos. That's only a gezerah. It's laharchik min havera. V'din Torah, according to Torah law, sheyochal kol halayla ad sheyale amud hashachar. That you can eat it all night up until dawn. So what that would mean then, according to the Rambam, based upon Rava's statement, if you don't paskel like Rav Elazar ben Azariah, so then there is no obligation to eat the matzah or to eat the afikoman until dawn, which could, of course, entail, as I mentioned last week, having to stay up a lot later and making some people unhappy. Now, bottom line is, what is the Shulchan Aruch paskin?
No, what's the avera? It's just not getting...
That's a very interesting question, Josh. On the surface level, the answer should be you just haven't fulfilled the mitzvah. However, there is another consideration which may not be a consideration. We have a rule, you're not allowed to eat after the afikoman. Right? Whatever the Mishnah originally meant in its pshat sense, right? We tell people, once you've had the afikoman, the only thing you're allowed to have is the two kosas. You're not allowed to eat anything afterwards. Maybe you can drink water, but nothing else. Now, the flavor of the afikoman is supposed to be with you. That's the idea. Right? So that's the halacha, generally speaking. So the issue would be potentially, Josh, that if you're not allowed to eat any matzah after the afikoman, you're not to eat anything after the afikoman. So let's say I had my meal and I had the afikoman, but then my wife brings out these delicious charoses truffles that I want to eat. And I changed my mind. So the truth is I can eat them. The only thing is, after I eat the charoses truffles, I have to go eat matzah again for the afikoman. So that wouldn't be a problem, right? Because I can still, if I had just thought when I ate the first matzah, that wasn't my afikoman. I just love matzah. So I'm having more matzah in the middle of the meal. Now I have the charoses truffles. Now I have the afikoman. So that would be fine. But what happens if it's after chatzos? So obviously I'm not eating the charoses truffles then. But what happens if I eat more matzah? So I'm not allowed to eat it after. If once I can no longer eat the afikoman. Once afikoman time is over, I should presumably not be able to eat. So that would be, I mean, we're not talking about an Avera Chamura here, nothing that we'd have to, you know, make some type of Xera, but it would be inappropriate. The reason I think it might be irrelevant is the following, which is, I think I heard Rav Schechter say this decades ago. I think he quoted an Avnei Nezer, the Sachet Shavarav, who was one of the Gedolim, I think, late 19th century, I believe. And the Avnei Nezer, I think he cited, claimed that, if I'm remembering this correctly, is that the prohibition of eating after the Afikoman only applies in the time period that you can eat the Afikoman. In other words, here we actually have a leniency, ironically, for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And as according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, you can only eat the Afikoman and the matzah until Chatzos. And if you don't, you haven't fulfilled your mitzvah. But Ein Maftir and Achar Pesach Afikoman means during the period of the Seder, which for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is only until Chatzos, you may not eat. The last thing you eat has to be the matzah. But once Chatzos comes for Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so then it shouldn't be a problem, because it's already after the time period. Just as for everybody agrees, Ein Maftir and Achar Pesach Afikoman certainly has to expire by dawn. We don't say you're not allowed to eat the first day of Pesach during the day. So the question is, when does that period end that you can't eat, where the last thing has to be the matzah? So that's what he said, that if you hold that the Zman Midoraisa to Chatzos, so after Chatzos you can eat anything you want, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. According to Rabbi Akiva, that the Zman of Afikoman is all the way, the matzah is all the way until Amor HaShachar. The last thing you eat before Amor HaShachar, even let's say you have it at midnight or before midnight, the last thing you have to eat is matzah. But what it turns out, if you accept that as the principle, is that matzah you can eat all night. Why? To use the base medrash expression, I don't know what the good English expression is, mimman of shach. Either way, it's true. If you hold like Rabbi Akiva, the mitzvah of Afikoman's all night, so of course you can eat matzah all night until it's your last thing. And if you hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, so then you can eat anything after Chatzos. So if we're machmir for both of them, you can eat matzah after Chatzos. But certainly, because of Rabbi Akiva's opinion, the last thing that you would have to eat would be matzah if you eat anything after Chatzos. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, it wouldn't matter. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, if you eat matzah before Chatzos, anything you eat afterwards doesn't count, but you can eat anything you want. So it would turn out that if you eat enough matzah before, maybe if the Avnei Nezer is correct, it actually doesn't matter if your meal stretches after Chatzos, as long as you eat matzah at the end. Then whether you hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah or Rabbi Akiva, you would have fulfilled both opinions. All right.
Rabbi Weider, you made me feel very good, because before you were born, Barton's used to specialize in a particular candy called After Seder Mints.
I see.
And yes. And it always bothered me, because what do you mean After Seder Mints? You can't eat after the Afikoman. Obviously, he held the Afikoman, Barton's held only until Chatzos. And therefore, after Chatzos, you could have after Seder Mints.
Oh, great Lundus. Okay. All right. So, how do we paskin, actually? So now, I'm going to just take a look at the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, La'achar gemar kol hasuda, ochlem mimatzah hashmura tachas ha-mapa kezayas kol echad. You take from that piece of the matzah that you had put aside, and the truth is, if you don't have enough or you lost a piece, you just take other matzah. Zecher lePesach hanechal al hasoba. This matzah is zecher leKarban Pesach, which you ate only after you were sated, so you wouldn't come to break a bone. V'yochlenu beheseba. You should eat the Afikoman doing leaning like you eat matzah. V'lo yivarech alav. You don't make a bracha of hamotzi or of any baruch hashem mitzvah. And then he says, "V'yehezahir laochlo kodem chatzos." So he is concerned, since Afikoman is part of the mitzvah matzah, he's concerned that you eat that before chatzos, in accordance with the opinion of Tosfos, that we paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And then the Ramah adds, based upon Aran, "V'yaktim atzmo shegama halal yikra kodem chatzos." So unlike Tosfos. The Ran says that even the Hallel, even though it's only Drabbanan, should also be completed before Chatzos, because the Hallel is sort of intimately connected to the Seder, to the Mitzvah Sachila, and therefore that should be done before Chatzos as well, which means, effectively speaking, the Arba Kosos are going to be done before Chatzos, because the last Kos is going to be at the end of Hallel. Okay. Fine. Are there any questions about this?
I have one question, Rabbi. I sort of thought that we have like kavana that the last piece that we're eating is the afikoman, and therefore, what you said about, well, if you wanted something a little bit afterwards, have another piece of matzah, and now this piece of matzah is the end of your meal.
I don't think I maybe a mistake, but I don't think that's correct. In other words, we have. I mean, I don't think you say. I know Hasidim say l'shem mitzvah afikoman. But the reason we normally say I'm having my afikoman is because it's usually the last thing we're going to eat. We've had enough to eat. We've hopefully left a little bit of room. But I don't think that precludes a change of heart. I admit that I'm pretty sure that is the case generally. I admit my own particular personal bias because I occasionally share this with my students. And we have an unusual type of Seder in our home. And one of the unusual things we do, I might get in trouble for saying this, but we decided a long time ago that since the primary mitzvah suda on Lo Pesach is in fact eating Pesach, Matz, and Morar, that is the meal, we might call it the shawarma, and we don't have a carbon Pesach, that what happens is after we've had Korech, we bring out our chicken soup with chicken balls, so that's our basar, and maybe matzah balls, although not in recent years. We have our chicken soup with our chicken dumplings, I guess, whatever you want to call them, and then we eat the afikoman, and then we bench. Now it's I know I could make some trouble here because there's some people who really want to have big meal at the Seder, which I don't understand. Or maybe I'll start a further trend. But the fact is, in my case, I'm not stuffed to the gills when I'm eating the afikoman, and I might see literally a charoses truffle. My wife makes many varieties of charoses, which are delicious, all sorts of kinds. And it's like, I think I want one more of those. Okay, but that's fine. But now I'm going to have to eat the matzah if there's and I'm okay with that too. But I don't think there's such a thing as like a makdishit, it's afikoman, and now I'm bound. It's just the last thing you have to eat has to be matzah and for the mitzvah of afikoman. So if you
want to
a couple of times, you're fine.
So I'll tell you a secret. So if you have a big, big meal like most people do, like we do, you're stuffed to the gills and you can't have any more. So you have to have another bite. You say, okay, this another bite is the matzah.
That's exactly what I was understanding. So I shared my secret why I might actually change my mind, but I don't expect too many people to change their minds. Yes. Okay.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Rabbi, I know a number of people who, I guess, play a game of who can have the longest Seder. And according to this, I don't see how can they do that, because you're eating afikoman way after chatzot.
Correct.
Unless they're following Rabbi Akiva.
But the Shulchan Aruch, if they're Ashkenazim, they're supposed to finish Hallel before Chatzos. I think I'm going to be starting a revolution here. But not my fault. The Rama said it. And the truth is, even if you say Hallel after Chatzos, we have a long Hallel, relatively. We sing pretty much the entire thing. But still, it's still, you know, it's only be a 15, 20-minute difference, not more than that. But yes, it's supposed to, if you want to, listen, there is an idea. You could stay up all night learning Mishnayis Pesachim. I think that's what Chaim used to do. In other words, you can study Hilchos HaPesach until dawn if you want. Like, there is, by the way, strangely enough, there is much more of a halachic inyan or halachic reason to stay up Leil Pesach than to stay up Leil Shavuos. We don't have any evidence, as far as I know, in the Talmudic period that anybody stayed up all night Shavuos learning. But we do have evidence, which we read in the Haggadah 1, and we have a different brice in the Gemara and the Tosefta Pesachim, that there were Tanoim either who were up all night telling Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's in the Haggadah, or Rabban Gamliel, the Litvak, in the Tosefta, they were up all night studying Hilchos Pesach, so that, until the Talmidim came and said, you know, it's a morning time for Kriya Shema. So there's no question there's an idea of Pesach night, but the mitzvahs halayla outs, you know, have to be, or ideally should be finished by Chatzos. So yes.
Thank you.
I wouldn't participate in that game personally.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions, Adkan? Okay. So now we have one last section to our sugya, which is actually back to, of all things, Agada. We're not done with Agada on this parak. We're going to get a little halacha and the next Mishnah, and then a lot more Agada again, such as Maseches Brachos. I'm going to ask you a question, though. I spent some time thinking about this, and it's the kind of question that is a very modern question. Let me start with the following. Most Rishonim do not comment very much about Agada. Unless, for some of them, if there was something theologically really problematic, maybe. But if I would open up Rishonim, commentaries of Rishonim on the Perek and Abrachos in general, you know, they're like modern, very yeshivas, modern, you know, Lithuanian yeshivas. They get to Agada and they mostly skip it. Some Rishonim a little bit more, most Rishonim a little bit less. Then you get commentaries of Achronim, who start to take, at least that we have, who start to take a greater interest in the Agada. So for those who have somewhat of a traditional yeshiva education, you might be familiar with the Marsha. The Marsha has what we call the Chidushe Halachos and the Chidushe Agados. In certain yeshivas, like Chafetz Chaim, they learn Gemara, Rashi, Tosfos, and Marsha. But I think they learn mostly Chidushe Halachos. But the Marsha took the time to write commentary on the Agados as well. And then there is the Sefer called the Ein Yaakov. I don't have my volume down here, whose purpose was to take just the Agados in Shas, and it's a separate, mine's a five-volume set with multiple commentaries on. But even as I look through the commentaries, there's one aspect, and different commentaries and their style and their approach may or may not be your or my cup of tea, but they're engaging the Agada through their sort of frame of reference. But there's one type of question that is a very modern question that I do not see generally asked, which is structure. Broader literary structure. When you have a series of Agados together, why are they like this? So sometimes the Rishonim will point out, or Aharon point out, and I said this many times when we did the earlier parts of this parak, that you'll get a chain of Agados when it's the same odd concatenation of, you know, Ruvain quoted Zvulun, quoted Yosef, and so we have a number of those. And so that often is an explanation, and that's often the simple explanation. But thinking about these things from a literary perspective, structure and what is it doing here, is not the kind of question that I see asked. If you want to take a very odd kind of parallel, but it's offset by about 500 years, if you ever study Rashi on Chumash, or you study Ibn Ezra, or you study Rashbam, they are very atomized commentaries. In other words, Rashi concerns himself with a word, with a phrase in a pasuk, quotes a medrash on it. Rashi almost never concerns himself with how do two psukim connect, or how does one section connect to the next section to connect to the next section. The first commentator I'm aware, and I don't know if he's the earliest one, who starts to really see the bigger picture is Ramban. I don't want to say that there's nobody earlier, I'm not sufficient expert, but the Ramban is the first, certainly major commentator that I'm aware of, who actually starts to think about broader literary structures. Following Ramban, Abarbanel, you know, makes this into a whole, you know, a whole that becomes a whole hallmark. But it is not, it wasn't always the intuitive way of thinking, or certainly not of commentating. We don't get comments of Rashi for the most part, or Rashbam, or before Ramban that I know of, that sort of are looking to see a bigger picture. And I think that this is true later when you're looking, I don't want to say, again, I'm not, by no means do I spend so much time reading all the commentaries on Agada, but I think it's a very distinctly modern approach. I think influenced by general approaches to literature starting in the 20th century. I suspect that's when you first start to find this. People are thinking much more about structure. Certainly in the academy, when people study academic Talmud, they think often more about that than they do about the substance of issues. So I don't want to ignore the individual pieces and their substance, but I'm going to ask you, as we read these few Agados until the Mishnah, to try to figure out what is it, what's going on here, why are these here? Now, the first one is obvious. It connects the Yetzias Mitzrayim. That I have no problem, but it's sort of what follows. How are they connected? And as we do it, consider that you may have multiple reasons. Sometimes things are brought in tangentially, like is a continuation of something, but there are pieces that may be part sort of a broader picture, or sort of as a broader message. And I think that it is something that Chazal do more often than we realize. To give you one example in the world of halacha, I would imagine, I could be wrong, but I'd imagine that the KJ laity is probably not so machmir or excessive on the din of getting smashed on Purim. I don't know why. I could be totally wrong. Just my assumption. You know, maybe I only know part of the KJ crowd. But my sense is that the people were not, and I speak for myself here, we don't have such hislav or such enthusiasm for getting drunk on Purim. I don't drink at all, personally.
We follow the Ramah.
What's that?
We follow the Ramah.
So the Gemara says, I don't even follow the Ramah. So I'll tell you, so the Gemara in Megillah says, I think that's Zayin Amid Beis, that Chayv Adam Lebasume Bepuria Ad Lo Yoda Bein Or Hamar Lebarach Mordechai. Now, I don't know what the word basume obviously means to get drunk. I like to say it means really to get pickled. Literally, I don't know if it's the same word. It could mean to become sweet. There are sweet drunks. But let's put it this way. It really means to get smashed pretty seriously. And then the Gemara tells a story that Rabba and Rab Zera one year got together for Purim, and they really got smashed. Rabba certainly got smashed. Come Rabba, b'shachte l'Rabzera. He got up and it says literally he slaughtered Rab Zera, shchita. And then when he woke up from his drunken stupor, he had to pray, and Rav Zera was revived, was resuscitated. The next year, Rabba said to Rav Zera, let's party. And Rav Zera said to him, miracles don't happen all the time. That's the end of the story. Okay, now, it's not, what is the story doing there? Are you going to just say, well, first the Gemara tells you a din, and it tells you a story. Okay, obviously we understand the connection. However, Meiri and others quote Rabbeinu Ephraim. It might be Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Talmud of the Rif. I'm not sure. He had a very prominent student, Rabbeinu Ephraim, who says that we paskin, you don't have to drink. You don't drink on Purim at all. But the Gemara says Chayav Adam LeBasume Bepurya. So the answer is the story that's told afterwards is a Masa Lisna. In other words, remember you have an Amoraic statement. It's not a Mishnah or a Brisa, I think, that says Chayav Adam LeBasume Bepurya. And then the Gemara tells a story which tells you what happens when people get smashed on Purim. So some, by the way, the position, I don't know if it's the Ramah or the Mechaber, is that what the story does is tell you is you do drink on Purim, but you don't drink Ad Lo Yada. In other words, there's a mitzvah drinking on Purim for the simcha of the day, but not libasume, not to get so totally drunk. And the all those who say you don't get totally smashed, it's all about, you know, you drink a little bit, but not totally. But the basis for some of these opinions is that is used to undermine the halacha. So Rabbeinu Ephraim goes as far as to say, there's no mitzvah drinking at all on Purim, because the mice is to show you that we don't hold like that particular halacha. So agada or can play a role in a sugya. I don't know how many other examples you get that are so stark and where we've shown them explicitly invoke that idea, but you do have such an idea. So now, the Gemara says the following. This is dealing with Yitzias Mitzrayim. I don't know that this is in any way connected to anything other than we just spoke about Yitzias Mitzrayim and going free. And we had a machlokes as to how we look at the primary time of eating Karm Pesach. In other words, we were freed at Chatzos, but we didn't go free until daybreak. So the question is, which is the real geula? Is it the official manumission, or is it actually in reality going free? So now the Gemara quotes the following. God says to Moshe, the last command effectively, right before Parshas HaChodesh, God says to Moshe, Daber na bos ne ha'am, and he says, V'yishalu ish me'es re'ehu, v'isha me'es re'usa k'le chesef u'k'le zahav. Please, the way now, again, no. The simple meaning of na means now. It means achshav. That's what it means 99% of the time in Chumash. That's the pshat. But you may be familiar with the fact that Chazal frequently, Rashi quotes this a few places, in na ela lishon bakasha. Please. Okay. So in na ela lishon bakasha. That's what Abay Rav Yanai says. Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu leMoshe, bivakasha mimcha, I plead with you, Leich emor lahem liYisrael, go say to the Jewish people, Bevakasha mikem, I request from you, please, Sha'alu miMitzrayim klei chesef uklei zahav. Please borrow your stuff. And they're going to take that stuff with them. The Egyptians are not, it's borrowing in quotes. Shelo yomar, that nobody should say, that Avram Avinu, Shelo yomar oso tzadik, Avram Avinu is going to say to me, Va'avadun vi'inu osam, hiein bahem. That God fulfilled his promise at the Bris Bein Abisarim that they will enslave them and they will afflict them. That he did. However, v'achreichin yetsu b'rechush gadol, that the Jewish people would go out with a myriad of riches, lo kiyem b'hem, that God didn't do. That you gave him the bad parts. You don't want Avram Avinu to come complain to God. Amru lo, the Jewish people said to Moshe, ulevai shenetze ba'atzmenu, just be happy to go free. Get borrowing, just take us free. Mashal le'adam shahaya chavush b'veso asurim. This is analogous to a person who was in jail, locked up in jail. V'ho yu omrim lo b'nei adam. People would say, motzien oschal le'machar mi'veso asurim. Tomorrow, we're going to take you out of jail. V'nostim l'chama mon harbe. And we'll give you a lot of money. Amar ve'omer lohem, and he says to them, "Bevakasha mikem, uni hayom, let me free me today. Eini mevakish klum, honey, you don't have to give me any money. Just let me out. Let me out a day early. Okay, don't make me wait." That is the way the Gemara presents God's request, which in the end the Jewish people did fulfill. They did borrow. And the pshat in the pasuk doesn't indicate any hesitations on their part. But Chazal say that from their perspective, they would have just preferred to be freed then rather than to wait just a little, not much longer, a little bit longer, and then to go out with great riches. Okay, so that's the first agada. Now the question will be, how does that connect to what came before? And the next line, I don't think you have to explain. This is just a continuation of what happened. Vayashilom, the Jewish people, in fact, borrowed from the Egyptians. Now, the word Vayashilom is a strange word. For those of you who still remember your diktuk from Ramaz or elsewhere, the word binyan is Vayashilom. It's a very strange binyan. I don't know if it, I don't know if it appears elsewhere in Biblical Hebrew. It probably does. I'm not thinking of it, but any volunteers for Vayashilom? So if you want to say to borrow in Hebrew, you say sha'al. Reuven sha'al mishimon. Or sha'al et ha'chardom. He borrowed the shovel. You use the binyan kal. Lehash'il, which is used probably a lot in rabbinic Hebrew, but elsewhere in biblical Hebrew. Lehash'il means to cause someone to borrow. So in rabbinic Hebrew, we talk about the sho'el, the borrower, and the mash'il, the lender. That's the term. So Vayash Ilum is so unusual that Chazal Darshan, Omar Rabbi Ami, Malame Shehish Ilum the Al Korcham. In other words, it wasn't by Yishalosh Yitzrayim, but Vayash Ilum. Somebody forced somebody to borrow, caused somebody to borrow, against their will. Against whose will? Ika da Amre, the Al Korcham de Mitzrayim, that in effect the Jews forced the Egyptians to borrow them, almost as you better give us this stuff. The Ika da Amri Bal Karcham de Israel, that the Egyptians forced the Jews came for stuff, and the Egyptians said, "Take it, get out of here. You've got to borrow it now. Get out of here." And now the Gemara explains, "Dichsev unavas bayis tichaleich." So Amanda Amar Bal Karcham de Mitzrayim. Those who say it was against the Egyptians' will, basically, that they were being plundered and they knew it, but they had no choice. They quote the verse, "Unavas bayis tichalam shalom." The member of the household will divide up the booty. In other words, the Egyptians had no choice. They were being plundered, and they couldn't do anything. And manda marbal kochem d'Israel, why would the Jews have been against it? Why did they have to take it? Mishamasui. It was too much to carry. Okay. Now, next. Again, one more statement that relates to the plunder. Vayinatzlu es Mitzrayim. The Torah says they were menatzel Egypt. Not clear what the word vayinatzlu exactly means. It somehow something to do with the separation of money. You have a very similar expression, but it's not used exactly the same way. The Rachel Leah say to Yaakov, "Ki chala osher asher hitzila lokim me'avinu lanu hu lavaninu." It's almost like to separate. So they separated the Egyptians from their assets. But
and lehit not sale could also be to take advantage of.
Ooh, is that a modern? That's a modern usage, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. So. I don't think that Chazal were thinking that. I don't think that's a rabbinic usage. Omar Rav Ami, so there are two interpretations here. Malamed Sha'asa'ua Kimitsuda She'ein Bo Dagan. That's Rabbi Ami. And Reish Lakish says, Asa'uha Kimitsuva She'ein Bo Dagim. So I don't know where this comes. Reish Lakish's opinion fits a little better in the words. Vayinatslu is a Lashon Mitsuva. The very, very deep parts of the water where there aren't so much fish. The Rashi explains that Vayinatslus Mitzrayim, they left almost nothing behind. Kimitsuva She'ein Bo Dagim. Rabbi Ami's interpretation is a little stranger because it's not clear how you get it from Vayinatslu. They made it like a mitzvah, like a trap, She'ein Bo Dagon. The Rashi explains that when, obviously, if you set a trap and you don't put bait in it, what you wind up in the trap in terms of animals that you catch is nothing. Either the Egyptians had nothing left or almost nothing left. Okay, so these two statements, I think, are just connected to the plot. Because you don't have to explain what they're doing here. They're a continuation of the Jews plundering Egypt. Now, the Gemara quotes now, without a name, another drasha. Eheyeh asher eheyeh. And this is what God said. Moshe asks God for his name. What should I tell them? And God says to them, Eheyeh asher eheyeh. Now, so much so that that is actually treated as one of the shemos of God. I know it's very strange, but that's how it's treated in the halacha. That one of the names of God is Eheyeh asher eheyeh. Now, but if you look at the next part of the pasuk, God says to Moshe, Eheyeh asher eheyeh. And then he says, Vayomer Hashem Moshe kosamar el b'nei Yisrael, Eheyeh shlachani alecha. God then says to me, he says to Moshe, my name is Eheyeh asher eheyeh. But he tells him, go to the Jewish people and tell them, Eheyeh shlachani alecha. So the question is, what happened to the other one? Why is it only one of the two? That's what's bothering the darshan here. So he says the following. Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu le Moshe. Lech emar lohem le Yisrael. Ani ha-yisi imachem b'shibud zeh. I have been with you in this enslavement, in this exile in Egypt. Va'ani eheyeh imchem b'shibud malchios. And even after I redeem you, and then once again you go into exile, I will be with you then as well. Amar lefanav. Moshe said to God, Ribbono shel Olam, daya litzara b'shaita. Enough to worry about the mouse problems now, not the future problems. All you need to do is tell them they feel terrible now. You're promising you're going to redeem them. And you promise them, by the way, when you get into trouble again, I'll redeem you then too. It's like, Daya litzar b'shaita. Amar le HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepted Moshe's argument. Lech emor lohem, Eheyeh shlachani alecha. Go say to them, right, only one Eheyeh. Eheyeh, I'm going to be with you in this tzara of Egypt. Now, it is a very interesting agada. It certainly is an important life lesson about how you deal with crisis. In the midst of a crisis, generally speaking, worry about that crisis, not the one that's going to come down. I mean, I'm not saying you should never think about unintended consequences, but sometimes you have to deal with the crisis that is now. Okay, but why is this here? How is this connected to anything that came before? It's not by Daber Nobeos Neom. It's not connected to the plundering of Egypt. It's not connected to when they went free. When was their freedom? Midnight or the next day? I'm leaving that question there still. Now the Gemara quotes one more drasha, which I believe we've seen, although I don't know. I don't remember if the whole Gemara and Daf Vav Amud Beis, I don't remember whether or not the whole thing was there or most of it was there. The whole thing is there. So the Gemara quotes it here again. Aneni Hashem Aneni. The Gemara there said it in the context of, is that Tfilas Mincha is particularly in Eis Ratzon because Eliyahu was answered by God, Bishas HaMincha. So Aneni Hashem Aneni. Amar Rabbi Abahu. Lamar Eliyahu Aneni Beis Pa'amim. Lamed Sha'amar Eliyahu Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam. Aneni Teved Eish Min HaShamayim. V'toch Al Kol Asher Al Mizbeach. First, answer me that fire should come down from heaven and burn my kavanas that are on the mizbeach. And then va'aneni shepaskiach daitam. You should make sure their mind doesn't wander. In effect, kidei shelo yamru masek shafim hein. In other words, the priests of the Baal were automatically going to say, "Ah, it's just anybody who wants will look at it." Imagine the fire comes down from heaven, incinerates everything on the mizbeach and more. And there's people are going to say, oh, it's Maisik Shafer. Maisik Shafer, it really wasn't an act of God. And Nemar, V'atahasi boses li b'macharanis. Eliyahu accuses God of having caused the Jewish people's hearts to be turned aside. And therefore, they're going to look at this and say, oh, yeah, it was Masik Shaptim. It was actually sorcery. It wasn't really God. So I ask the question, what is this Agada doing here? How is this connected to what came before? How is this whole thing connected?
Rabbi, there's a lot of noise in the line. Someone's not on mute.
Okay, I'm Marshall. To mute everybody. Hold on. There's probably a button to mute all. Hold on 1 second.
It's okay.
We're good now?
Okay. It's muted.
Okay, he just muted.
Okay. Thank you. So what is the connection between all of these things? Again, I'll leave out the pieces about Vayinatzlu es Mitzrayim, about Vayashilum, but we were learning about when is the Geula? Chatzos or the morning? In other words, when they received their decree of freedom or when they actually went free. Then the question of, you know, should they go out, you know, they wanted to go out now and God said, no, you have to first borrow all this stuff. And then the statement of God says to Moshe, you know, tell them this. And Moshe said, how can you do that? And God says, sure, okay, only tell them about now's redemption. And then Eliyahu's concern about, they'll say that the fire burning is Maisek Shafim. What is the connection between these things? I hope everybody will look. You may not like my answer. I hope you'll like my answer. But I think everybody could agree. This seems to be literally like you just picked random ingredients and you threw them together. There's no name connecting them. There's no, at least immediately apparent, theme connecting them. The last one is not at all connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim. In fact, at least you could say, Ayah Asher Ayah is connected to Yetzias Mitzrayim in some sense. So what is going on?
Maybe it has something to do with the fact that we want to make sure that Yetzias Mitzrayim is not a random event. Like they finally decided to let us go somehow to make sure we know it's absolutely a Maaseh Kadosh Baruch Hu.
But how do any of these Agados address that? Eliyahu, as I understand. But none of the Agados in Mitzrayim. Undoubtedly, I think Rashi may even comment on, somebody comments on this, right? In Egypt, they did have an issue, right? The sorcerers of Paro, it took a few plagues. They finally said, if that's what it means, Etz Bailo Kimhi, right? It took three plagues till the sorcerers finally gave up and realized we can't match Moshe Rabbeinu, right? We're playing with someone in a different league. So that part is interesting, but that's not what's invoked here.
So I think what's going on is there is a difference between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And it comes from the same sentence, but they're interpreting two parts of that sentence. So the agarot that are given have two words in the sentence, and each one has a different interpretation.
You noticed something that I hadn't paid attention to, but I think it only works for the last two, that both of them have doubling of words. Aneni Hashem, Aneni and Ayasher, yeah. In other words, it's a little stretch that Vayashilum, it's only one word, two interpretations of it. And I'm not sure about the first I got in the first place, Dabar Nabas Ne'am, right? There I don't see it's an interpretation of two words. But I'm appreciative of that last part. I never thought about that. In other words, the doubling of the words. Okay, and any other suggestions? So let me make the following suggestion. I think we have a concept that one of the central principles of Torah is V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. What does V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha mean? So the Gemara in Shabbos, quoting a very famous statement of Hillel, is the alach sani l'chaver tachlotavet, that which is detestable to you, don't do to someone else. Now, the truth is that statement is incomplete, or taken literally, doesn't actually get you to v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. And that in the following sense, I might not like something, so it's true I shouldn't do that to someone else. But the really crucial element in v'ahavta l'reacha kamocha is seeing it from the perspective of the other person. The first step is I wouldn't like it, so they wouldn't like it either. But I would say that even the next step is to see what is it that would actually sonnet upon them. There could be something I don't like, but someone else does like, or something I do like and they don't like. Every one of these issues, and I'm particularly struck, what first struck me was Daber Nabos Ne'am and Eyasher Eyah. These are two cases, one case God wins and one case God loses. God makes a presentation from a certain vantage point. God sees a certain picture. He made a promise to Avram Avinu, and he said, listen, they're going to be enslaved, but I'm going to pay them rent handsomely when they go free. From God's perspective, he had to face Avram Avinu, and he said, of course I have to, in effect, delay their freedom so that we can take care of this. He wasn't looking at it from the perspective of the Jewish people. You go and you tell, I've got great news for you, that they're going to free you tomorrow, and they're going to give you compensation you won't believe. Yeah, but from the perspective of the person in jail, he says, forget the money. Just free me now. Free us from Egypt now. Now, in this case, the Jewish people acceded to God. In the case of Eyah Asher Eyah, so God sees a broader perspective. He says, listen, I'm going to redeem them now. I'm going to redeem them. They go into exile again and again and again. Now, that's very nice from God's perspective, who sees the whole scope of history. But from the perspective of the Jewish people who are in misery in Egypt, the last thing you want to tell them, from the last thing they want to hear, is that, yes, God is going to come redeem you from this misery. But by the way, you know, several more times in history, you're going to Gaza as well. But don't worry, God's going to redeem you. Two individuals, in this case, God and human beings, but it can, more typically two human beings, can look at the same series of events from two totally different perspectives. Two totally different perspectives. And that's what Eliyahu was concerned about. Eliyahu was about to watch fire come down from the heaven and consume the Karbanos on the Mizbeach. Most of us would say, "Woo, that's pretty impressive." But Eliyahu understood that someone else in a different frame of mind, coming from a different place, who already was so distant from God, could look at the very same thing and say, "Oh, yeah, fake miracles, that was really just kshafim." In order to be able to relate to other people, in order to treat other people with the appropriate respect and to create a better society for the Jewish people, for everybody, you have to be able to see through their eyes. You have to be able to see not only your perspective, what you might like or not like, but how are they going to see things? And I think that the connection to the halacha here is, as Mr. Arfa, you almost sort of said, is that, I don't know if it's two words in the same pasuk, but both Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah and Rabbi Akiva look at chipazon, and you have two ends here. You have when the decree of freedom is issued, and you have when you're actually freed. And the truth is, different people are going to look at it in different ways. Some people are going to look at it as soon as I have the piece of paper indicates that I'm freed, everything is good now. It doesn't bother me. The next 6 hours of Sheba don't bother me. And other people are going to look at it from the perspective of, you know, to quote that famous line of Yogi Berra, it ain't over till it's over. But when we actually leave, Yimacharas HaPesach Yatzu B'nei Yisrael Le'Neicho Mitzrayim. So the Gemara starts with really the same reality, in effect, and you can take two totally different perspectives on it. And then it presents to us really three agados: God with the looting of, with the taking payment or looting, whatever your perspective is, from the Egyptians, where God saw it one way, because he had, and the Jewish people might have seen it another way, according to Chazal. God informing Moshe about the Shibud and future Shibudim, and Moshe suggesting, you know, they may not see it the same way. And finally, Eliyahu's miraculous event, the fire coming down. And then, how are people going to look at it? Is it a miracle of God, or is it just a maisik shafim? And I think that that is the challenge in whenever we interact with other people, is not simply to see it from our perspective, but to recognize, to try to understand Bashar Husham, what is, whether it's correct or not correct, what is the perspective of the person for whom we are coming from? If we wish to persuade anybody, you have to understand not the way you think, but the way the other person thinks. And I think that might be what the connection of these agados are internally and why perhaps they are connected to the halacha that comes before. Any questions?
It's very good. Excellent.
I think it makes certainly a good drasha. I don't know whether it's true in the Gemara, although I feel that there's enough of a question that it's a pretty good end.
But Rabbi, also the obvious is you're taking into consideration elements of leaving Mitzrayim and leaving a better reputation for the Jews. Never mind the inward structure. It's also how, as we leave Mitzrayim, you know, how we conduct ourselves. And ma yomru hagayim.
Interesting that you say that, though, because this, you know, you would think that this Gemara could be, Chazal were concerned about the issue, but not in this Gemara, meaning fodder for anti-Semites. There is a pseudo-Talmudic passage. I think it's pseudo-Talmudic. I think it's a Masechta Tamid. Oh, no, I take it back. It's a real Gemara. It's in Perek Chelek, where the Egyptians came to demand payment. They came to Alexander the Great, and they would tover the Jewish people to a Din Torah. And they said, they owe us a lot of money, because 600,000 people borrowed all this stuff. So what were the Jews to do? So the Chacham Gavia ben Pesisa, it's a series of three stories like this. Gavia ben Pesisa says to Chacham, let me go and argue. If I win, great. If I lose, I'm a nobody. So they'll say they beat a nobody. And he goes and he says to them, there were 600,000 Jews. It was 400 years or 210 years working day and night. How much were their wages? And it would turn out you didn't pay us enough. So you still owe us money. And the Egyptians fled. So Chazal were sensitive to that question, and medievals, particularly Rashbam, was bothered by these things because he had to deal with Christians. But our Gemara, I think, interestingly enough, does not seem to be concerned about that dimension, even though obviously at other times it is a real issue.
Rabbi.
Yes.
Do you have an idea where this your idea came from? Is it from something you encountered in terms of literary criticism, or is it just, you know, is there a source for it, some kind of source, or is it just something that you have you have worked on yourself?
I was bothered by a question, and okay. this seems to me the best way I can find an answer to the question. I'm obviously using I'm coming at through a certain perspective of what kind of an answer I'm looking for, but no, I haven't seen anybody deal with this, and yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.